Welcome to Tell Me About X, Meaningful Conversations About X by X. Today, I am really excited to welcome the next guest onto my interview series, Ari Luna. She is the Director of People and Culture at Trans Lifeline and a comedian. Ari, thank you so much for being here. If you want to kick us off by sharing with the audience right now, what is taking up the most time and space for you right now?
Yeah, I think in a very lovely way, I think that the things that fill me up are just like really filling up my life right now. I am able to engage in a lot of really meaningful spaces with friends, a lot of really meaningful spaces like teaching comedy and performing comedy. And then even at work, the things that really bring me joy are just like collaborating with people in thoughtful and unique ways. And so really feeling like my cup is feeling pretty full these days. And I'm really grateful for that.
I love the feeling of your cup being really full, not tipping over and not on empty too, a very healthy balance. In terms of some of the work that you do, I know you have experience in nonprofit administration, people, HR, but you bring such a, as you were talking about, thoughtful, intentional approach. What led you to really thinking about these spaces in radical ways and these industries specifically?
Yeah, I think a couple of different points of inspiration for me. One is when I was in school for social work, I was really interested in the macro level sort of social work, like changing policies and affecting different types of change, like on a systemic level. And I realized I didn't quite want to be in like policy work, but was like, what is something similar that I could do? And found myself in nonprofit administration. And I think in conjunction with like my ethics, my personal ethics and like way of moving through the world, I really found that creating these spaces that are designed to support staff and help people thrive and live meaningful lives in a way that is supported by their workplace was really important to me. And hearing from staff that was important to them. And so I was like, great, what's important to all of us? Let's do it. Let's figure out how to best support each other through this work. And so that was the sort of big takeaway for me was just like, how can I, if we know that this world is built on like systems that are not built for us, not designed to help us, how can we work to create systems that are built for us and that do work for us? And
Yeah. In our sphere of influence, how can we create spaces where people feel like they can thrive, not only survive? How can we change policies and really enact change? And I have questions about how you do that in different spaces in your life. And one of the ways you do that is at Trans Lifeline. For folks who are not familiar, what is the mission and vision of the organization at large?
Yeah, so Trans Lifeline's mission is to connect trans people to the community support and resources that we need to thrive. And the vision for Trans Lifeline is that we envision a world where trans people have the connection, economic security, and care that everyone needs and deserves, and to be free of prisons and police. And so, see, I think that those missions are very, the mission and vision there is also very important to like my personal life too.
How did you get involved with the work there?
Yeah, so I initially was at another organization here in Austin, but I heard about Trans Lifeline through a friend who worked there and got to hear all about the incredible work that was happening. And I was like, this sounds really great. I like, wish that I could be a part of this. This feels like, at the time I was just like working in a place that is like mostly that is by trans folks for trans folks, like, focused on trans work. Like, how can I want it? Like, I want to be part of this work. And luckily enough, they had an HR position that was open and they were really building out their HR processes at the time. And so I was able to just jump right in and start building that infrastructure. And it's been 3 years since then.
Yeah, 3 years went by like that, making changes, doing the work with a capital W, and something that you're really passionate about. When you talk about the infrastructure, making changes, I know it doesn't happen overnight, but in terms of building these spaces, what does that really look like? Especially when you think about kind of that HR people role too, and helping guide folks. And when you think about benefits, pay, time, mental health, and all of those aspects.
Yeah. So I think I'm very lucky to be in a position of structural power where I can have the sort of decision-making power to really make some of those changes happen around, like you said, like pay benefits, whether it's like policies that affect like our time off. Like for some examples that we've done is just like really try to move towards like more pay, like an equity pay structure. We're like not quite there yet, but we've been working at it for a while now. When I first joined, I think the organization was covering like maybe 75% of benefits. And so we bumped that up to as much as we could through our like provider, which is 99%. And then we also started covering some of the costs for dependent healthcare as well. And just like really taking a look at like what do folks need and want. And so I think there's that formal power space of just like these things happen in a way like where me or like another leadership team member can decide like, hey, we want to see this change happen and let's make it happen. But I think at Trans Lifeline, so much of the work comes from staff members at large, and so much of that work happens through them just relaying a request or like asking for something, or even like opening up at a staff meeting and being like, hey, I really think that we need to work on what care looks like here at the organization. How can we form like a mental health committee to look at like our mental health resources for the organization? And I think it's my responsibility to then support those efforts and to say, yes, I can support you as best I can. Here's what I can do, depending on the context. But yeah, I think so much of it comes from those informal spaces as well. And so I'm so grateful for those lessons that like staff have taught me over the years. And so that's been really important.
Yeah, especially in regards to mental health and creating spaces that are specifically meant to support and kind of walk through as well from work and also the relationships and trust that you build with folks. Is there anything that comes up that folks really wanted? I know you mentioned Trans Lifeline is an organization for and by trans folks as well. So I'm thinking about what organizations can also adopt to make sure that their workplaces are more inclusive too.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a couple of different things come to mind. I think on the base level, I think we've talked about this last time, maybe we had a chat, was just like making sure that like that people's HR infrastructure is built to support trans folks and that like people aren't getting dead named or misgendered like on official like documents. And there are certain documents like your I-9 and like your pay stuff where you do have to have a legal name or something. But other than those areas, I think just allowing folks to be who they are is going to be really, really important. And then beyond that, I think there's things like, what does your benefits package look like for trans folks? Like, because mental health insurance covers costs related to like gender affirming surgery. It takes some like research to figure out which plans do. Also, if you have an FMLA policy, like how accessible is it? How easy is it for somebody to take time off? Are they, you know, what kind of conditions do they come back to? Are they supported while they're out? Like, just even like their supervisor checking in, like maybe once or twice while they're out on leave or something like that could be really important and meaningful. So yeah, I think there's a lot of different pieces that folks can really tap into. And I think a lot of companies have really started to do things like, yeah, make sure you have your pronouns in your email, that you do like pronouns at meetings and things like that. But I do think that it goes beyond that to a culture of what happens if there are like microaggressions happening at your workplace, or if there's like people have, or even if there's just like an open aggression towards trans people, like what resources do folks have to go to somebody and be like, hey, I had this really unpleasant encounter. Like, what can we do about this? And do people's like restoration processes or conflict resolution processes build towards something that is restorative and that allows people to build and grow? Are they like punitive? Do they even acknowledge the complaints of trans folks? And so I think there's a lot of different pieces in there that folks can really tap into.
Yeah, tapping into the process, looking at every piece, also make sure that people feel seen and that if and when something happens, how do you really go about handling the situation to make sure that folks feel like they are supported and that situations can be prevented in the future too? I think when people get into the work, even with the best of intentions, there could be mistakes made. And that's okay as long as people definitely learn from them. Are there any mistakes that you see folks making in spaces where they really are trying to help, whether it's within an organization or just out in the world too? Because I know this work isn't limited to just your 9-to-5, let's say.
Yeah, I think that one of the mistakes that I see people making is, I think like you just said, that learning piece around what is expected of people who are maybe like newer to the space, who maybe need to do some homework, or who maybe needs to just be around folks who are like doing similar work and who maybe aren't as familiar with different types of pronouns or something. And I think that the mistake that I see people make is just that they become complacent in like their newness, and they're sort of just like, oh, well, like it will come. I don't have to actively engage in this. I can be passive about this. And I think that really creates a dynamic in which marginalized folks, like trans people, Black people, queer people, like BIPOC people, become like they're almost like casualty of somebody's learning curve, and where there's just like actual harm happening because somebody hasn't engaged in like their own edification in a way that is grounded enough. And so I think that's one thing that, because it puts the burden on other people in a really difficult way, to be like, I see you trying, but it's not quite there, and I don't know how to really address this. But I do think that, yeah, folks can push themselves to like really, really try to engage in this work and or like in those practices in a way that is thoughtful. And even like asking questions is really helpful. If you don't know, it's okay to ask. I think that feels better sometimes than just people being like, oh, I don't know, so I'm not going to try. And I don't see that very often, but I do. I have seen it before, and I do think it's like a rough spot to be in for everybody.
Yeah, if there's one thing that I'm not a fan of, it's the unpaid emotional labor and putting people in uncomfortable positions because you didn't do the homework or you didn't look up at least one answer or try to find something as well. Asking questions is also really good, and saying, I know everybody has different experiences coming into it, but really not using that as an excuse to, like you said, meaningfully engage is so important. I know, Ari, that we met a couple, I think at this point, years ago. We've had conversations. You're involved in many different projects that support trans autonomy and Black liberation, health equity, and I'm sure you have many of these, but for folks who are in the work, are there any books or people, Instagram accounts you recommend people really follow?
Yeah, this is a great question. And I feel like I have scaled down quite a bit my involvement in like other things just these days, just for like my own care purposes. I would say like definitely connect with Trans Lifeline online, translifeline.org. One Instagram account that's been getting me through a lot of moments is just like is the Nat Ministry, Patricia Hersey. And also, I've had Rest is Resistance, and I meant to start reading it. I'm trying to get back into reading too in a way that feels sustainable. I feel like I was reading in a way that was unsustainable, or I was just like sort of voraciously just tackling books and then being like, I'm burnt out on books. So I'm trying to like ease back into it. And me and a friend get like some Kindles and are going to have like quiet reading time and stuff like that. So I'm super excited. But yeah, I think those are some of the things that I would recommend. Maybe I quite enjoy Frank Wolderson, writing about Afro-pessimism personally. Mama Sana Vibrant Woman is like an organization here in Austin who does really great work on health equity. So yeah, I think those are some of my recommendations that I'd start with.
Thank you for sharing some of those recommendations. I will link them in the episode details too. What you said about ferociously reading, I definitely relate to. And I think, oh my gosh, I'm putting this capitalistic mindset of, I need to finish these books. I'm not a quick reader, but I'm an impatient reader, especially with fiction. I just want to know what's going to happen. I blame my grandmother because she loves murder mysteries, which I do not, but she'll read the ending to see if she likes how it turns out. I don't do that, but she's a very quick reader. Something else that I wanted to ask is, you mentioned that you teach comedy, you are a comedian. Where do you get your inspiration for this element of your life?
Yeah, I think it's all about the friendships for me. Well, the thing that got me into comedy was that my friend made this scene. I can't remember the name right now, but it was just about improv and anarchy, and they had this zine that sort of really positioned improv comedy as making you like a better friend and a better collaborator, and just somebody who's like better able to work on projects and different stuff like that. And I was like, oh, I've got to get in on this. And so me and a couple of friends took some improv classes together, and I stuck with it I'm still doing it. And yeah, and I think the relationship piece of like comedy, or like that comedy comes from relationships, and the games that you find in relationships is really salient to me. And I think that, yeah, it's been a really cool source of inspiration for my life and for this how I move through the world now. Not to proselytize improv too much, but just like the sort of yes and mentality of just being like, it's something that I try to even teach like coworkers sometimes, or just like if you have a proposal and somebody else wants to like counterpropose, like what if we say like yes and to that idea of just yes and let's add this piece instead of like no, shut it down, cancel it, let's make something completely different. I just think it's a powerful tool to be able to world build together. I think in a world where like we've been so alienated by capitalism and other forms of oppression, it just is going to be, and the day where we ideally get to a place where those things are no longer plaguing our existence every day, like it will be so crucial for us to be able to like world build together. And so I think that is one of the inspirations for me.
It's a good kind of world building, in my opinion. I have taken an improv class and I do love the container of the class to promote silliness and creativity, which I think as adults we're taught to bog down and really not lean into, similar to what you were saying in terms of instead of saying no to something at work, saying yes, and how are we going to do this and be a little bit more open.
Yeah.
In terms of movies or TV shows, the main character or main characters, if it's a group, typically have these pivotal moments or character arcs. I know we're both still writing our stories and making decisions. When you think about your journey so far, what is an example of one of those really important moments for you?
Yeah. I think one of the important moments in my character journey so far has just been, I think really when it was when I committed to myself, I think for the first time in a really big way, when I was leaving my hometown to come to UT for school here in Austin, and my hometown, a lot of people stay behind and live there. It wasn't a place for me. It was a place that caused like a lot of harm to me. And I think I had to just say goodbye to a lot of it in a really big way. And I think that I had to choose all these different aspects of me that I didn't know that I was choosing at the time, but just like reasserting, like, and for some of the first time, like really embracing like my queerness, like my transness, like my other identities, and just really committing to saying, I am going to live a life that is best for me and my needs. And that was a big change. I know it was like a pretty young moment, but it was definitely like a huge sort of, it had a huge effect on me like moving forward. And I think now I find it much easier to prioritize myself and really make sure that I'm like taken care of as well as taking care of others. But yeah, I think that was maybe one of my big sort of character moments.
That is a big one, especially when you have a lot of people not making the same decision and staying in the same environment, the non-dominant narrative, and choosing your own path and leaning into your identities, creating your community. I'm sure other people have heard this term before, but I hadn't. I actually just learned about it in terms of third spaces. So not your home or not your workplace. Do you have a favorite third space in Austin where you feel that sense of community?
Yeah, I have maybe, if it's okay, I'll give two.
Yeah.
But I think one is definitely Fallout Theater. It's like the place where I perform. It's the place where I have a lot of connections and like meaningful relationships with folks. And it's just a very vibrant, exciting space to be in. It's like where I teach classes about stuff too. And then I think the other one is a house where two of my best friends live. And it's named Bane's World, after Bane, a sweet, sweet pup. And so I think that space feels like, I guess feels like home, but isn't technically my home. So it probably should be like a third space. But yeah, I think that both those spaces really, really nourish me. And I feel like I feel like I'm usually at one of those two places, honestly, if I'm not at home or at work. So
Or like, where's Ari? Maybe one of those two places. We love a nourishing environment.
Yeah.
I think it's so important to have those spaces and just those communities in your life. What stories do you wish you saw more of, not only in comedy, but in any environment?
Yeah, so many stories I wish I saw more of. Some of the big ones I think are just like, I would love to see like BIPOC folks be able to be, and trans folks be able to be characters that are just like dynamic and complicated and not just like one note, like either good or bad or cliche or something, and just be able to like really express the fullness of a life lived. And I think that is something that is like missing from me in a lot of media, is that I feel like even when I do see representation, it's like, oh, this person is just like categorically good. There's no question about where this person lies. And if in real life, so many of us often are just like, yeah, complicated, messy, things happen, conflicts happen, like none of us are perfect. And so I really want to lean out of the perfection or just cliche aspects of expressing stories. So I do wish that there's maybe more room to be complicated.
Yeah, more room to be complicated, really dynamic and layered, like other characters in TV shows, movies, or books that we see as well.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite TV show or movie right now? I know it could change, but...
Oh, gosh, I do. This may be telling or a little bit embarrassing, but I'll share. My favorite TV show for a long time has been MTV The Challenge. It is like not a great piece of media in terms of just like representation or like politics or anything like that. But it is so engrossing to me, and I'm just like captivated. I think it's because it moves really quickly and my attention span is just like, this is great. So many moving parts. I love it. But yeah, I think The Challenge is definitely my guilty pleasure go-to show.
You know what? We all need a guilty pleasure, and I appreciate you being honest and sharing with us here today.
Yeah.
Ari, is there anything that I didn't ask that you want to share with folks who are listening, or any other recommendations?
I think maybe just like my final thought would just be like, yeah, take care of each other. The world's not a gentle place sometimes. And so I think being able to like really care for one another in the ways that people want to be cared for is really important. So
absolutely. Take care of each other. Ari, I appreciate you holding space during this very busy time to have this conversation. I appreciate the work that you do. And thank you for being on Tell Me About X.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Of course. And to everyone listening, thank you. And we'll see you soon.